Caution, the Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience. And besides that, he's really weird. Welcome to the Mark Unger Show with international marriage speaker and author of Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage, Mark Unger. This is your source for practical, down-to-earth marriage advice without all the over-spiritualization or romantic nonsense. And now the host of the Mark Unger Show, Mark Unger.
Deliriously wild with joy. They've joined the Mark Unger Show, the show that deals with all things concerning
marriage.
Indeed, I'm your host, the one, the only Mark Unger. Joining me as always, the ever lovely and charming Diane Brierley and the amazing Philip James Unger. Engineering the show as always, the very talented but eerily creepy Timothy Robert Ray. Pushing buttons, twisting knobs. I'm trying to stay awake during this show. You know, people who haven't joined the show knew. They have no idea why we play that killer music.
Right.
Back in the day when we first started, we always say, Timothy Robert Ray sounds like a serial killer.
Mm-hmm. They always have three first names.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's him. So, yeah. You know. And then we used to say, engineer extraordinaire and part-time serial killer.
Yeah.
But if he didn't know the original joke, people think, what? So, anyway. Show's very confusing. This is the show that handles your marital challenges, relational conundrums, and dating dilemmas that you can email to us at ask@markgungor.com. This is how the show works. You can ask a question about anything, remain totally anonymous. We, in turn, are then brutally honest. This is the show of brutal honesty. We don't really care a whole deal about your feelings. If you want someone to be very, terribly sensitive about how you feel about things, email somebody else. But if you want to know what we think, bring it on. That's why the show is here. What have you got there, lovely lady?
Five horrible pieces of dating advice.
Versus five horrible people you could date. Because I'm sure we could talk about those people. There's probably more than five.
I bet there are.
Yes.
I bet there are more
All
than
right,
five.
This is
okay.
Horrible pieces of dating advice
that people often give to singles, apparently.
By the way, the worst amount of advice ever given, if you go to any church, is always to singles. It's terrible. It's terrible advice, and it's the most unbiblical concepts ever promoted in churches towards singles. I don't know what the heck. Anyway.
Okay.
All right, what do you got?
Number one, you'll meet your spouse when you stop looking.
Well, that is true. If you marry the one, you really should stop looking. Right?
No.
I mean, when I married my wife, I thought, you know, number one, I need to stop looking. Because she would really look down on that.
You'll stop looking when you meet your spouse is what you're trying to say.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You'll meet your spouse when you stop looking.
I misunderstood.
You had it reversed.
Okay.
A little reversal there.
Both good advice.
It is good advice. Yes,
it is. That's good advice. This is bad advice. There's certainly a lot of merit to not acting out of desperation and taking a season off from dating. However, taken to the extreme, this reverse psychology approach of sticking your head in the sand yet expecting to find a serious relationship is an oxymoron at best.
It's not an oxymoron. It's just a moron. I would remove the oxy. Now, here's the advice that we're making fun of. These are people who say, don't look. Don't look. Okay, God will bring you a spouse, which is just absurd, unbiblical, nonsense, but promoted blatantly throughout the church all over the world. Don't look, don't look. And then we wonder why we have so many women who are single, for heaven's sakes. It's just absurd advice. Quit looking.
Well, then they don't say you'll meet your spouse. They'll say God will bring you your spouse.
Yeah, like they're Moses or something. It's going to float in on a cloud.
That makes it even worse.
Oh, we met this, where was she? It was in Dallas, Texas. She was gorgeous. I mean, just, but she's like 38.
You know when you cough like that, that doesn't sound like the sound that goes with gorgeous. That sounds like repulsive.
No, it's like, I can't breathe.
Okay.
Like, holy cow.
Just saying.
Okay. Just what?
Okay.
What? That's
beautiful.
If someone says, yeah, that's right.
You're gorgeous. Makes me hurl.
Yeah.
Like you can't breathe.
Breathe. Okay.
Are you focusing now? So anyway, she's just kind of a babe, right?
Okay.
So we're talking to her, and you're single, and it's one of these, really, this is single? How can you be single, you know? Never married. And you think, what? What are you shaking your head for?
Because you assume that everything that's gorgeous should be married.
I do.
Half the time, what's gorgeous is a pain in the you know where.
How do you know? How do you know?
High maintenance in their way. Because
I'm gorgeous and I'm beautiful and wonderful.
As I was saying.
Look, all I know is, generally speaking, very attractive women attract men, hence the word attractive, and then they find spouses.
And then they marry them.
Now what happens after they get married? I agree with you.
Okay.
They might be some of the most psycho-crazy people on earth. I'm not talking about that. Okay. I'm just talking, you're very attractive. How do you not attract? She should have.
She probably did.
She should be like bees around her head.
Her craziness kept them all away.
No. She refuses to date.
But that doesn't mean they weren't attracted to her. That's not the point. Why am I debating this with you? Go on with your story.
The point is, she's trying to tell me, oh, I don't want to date.
Yes. Okay.
You want to get married? Yeah. What? But you don't date. No, we don't believe in dating. I think we should just, in this whole thing, don't look, you know, God will just bring someone. Yes. I mean, man, she's going to be 98, gorgeous 98-year-old, with everybody going, when she walks in the room, and still single. For heaven's sakes.
Waiting for that man who comes along and says, man, when I look into your eyes, I can tell you used to be really young. And that's how you know he's the one.
That's how you know.
Well, when they say this, I don't know, because yeah. I've never had this conversation with anybody.
Yeah, you're so good looking. My great-grandson ought to date you. That's about the time she'll find if I get a date.
So if you're not going to date and God's going to just bring somebody, how do you know that he hasn't already brought it and you just refuse to date him? What's their thinking?
This is what they're thinking. They're crazy.
Is somebody just going to walk up and say, I'm the one God
it's bad.
Sent me?
It's not that they're crazy. It's crazy advice that they take.
Yes.
You have no idea how many people believe this.
I know. I just have
Christian,
not had conversations
Christian,
so
Christian
with
women
them.
Who are single who think I should never date. Absurd. All right. What's number
two? Okay. Number two. Just follow your heart. If you get caught up in the tidal wave of feelings without an anchor of rational thought and sober discernment, your thinking will become clouded by the excitement of the new relationship. Blindly following your heart's waves of emotion without your brain getting involved can then quickly crash you into the rocks of reality if the relationship ends.
This is a major problem in Christianity because people are so caught up in emotiveness and emotions and feelings. It's the very thing that's destroying Western culture.
And emoticons.
And the emoticons. Exactly. So instead of people thinking in Western culture, we feel. Mm-hmm. Everybody's feeling, and that's why you gotta be so careful and politically correct, because it might hurt somebody's feelings. Oh my, the worst thing you can do in America is make somebody feel bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, better to kill them and bury them in the backyard. Well, that could be argued. That could be argued in court, and you could get off. But if you say them, call them something you're not supposed to call them, or use a word you're not supposed to use, or hurt their feelings, oh my goodness, you should be strung up and executed immediately. All this feely-touchy stuff, and the church has gotten involved in all this feely-touchy stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're about feeling-touchy. In fact, people think it's a sign of spirituality. And instead of following the Bible, their word of advice is just pray and ask God to tell you what to do. What terrible advice. You go to somebody for advice, and they tell you just pray and ask God. Well, you could have done that without them. Mm-hmm. Get away from people like that. They don't know what they're talking about. It's the ultimate cop-out. What kind of answer is that?
It's not.
I ask you for advice. The Bible says seek advice, seek wisdom. Instead of you giving me wisdom, you go, just tell, ask God to tell you what to do. What are you, Moses? These people are so spiritual. Oh. They're always hearing everything, but their lives are a disaster. Anyway, this follow your heart. Follow your heart. What it means is they're going to get caught up in their emotions. It's terrible advice. Don't follow your heart. Listen to your head. Think it through. If he walks like a skunk, he looks like a skunk, and he smells like a skunk, for the love of heaven, ladies. He's a skunk. Get away from him. Oh, but I just feel in my heart. Oh, my goodness. Then they get married and come to people like us and suck our brains dry, trying to fix the mess. Mm-hmm. So that is bad advice. Follow your heart, for heaven's sakes.
Number three.
Follow your dog. All right.
Number three, you're being too picky.
This is true.
People often say this to someone when they have turned down a seemingly viable guy or gal match, but it's actually not a matter of being too picky at all. It's a matter of holding high standards. You're free to create a list of healthy, realistic expectations of marriage and a mate. If you're a Christ follower, you can align your list with God's list to help unveil his perfect spouse for you. That one gets a little funky for me.
What's God's list?
What's God's list? How long is your list? How do you know if it's on God's list? And his perfect match for you.
Who says God has a list?
That's what I'm saying. That one's
crazy.
A little funky.
They're crazy.
But trying some people to, are
by
too
stopping
picky.
Crazy, they're still talking crazy.
Right. But the whole fact that you're being too picky.
You know what the only list is? That he's a believer.
Yeah.
And I mean believer, not someone, oh yeah, I believe in God, like, you know, some space creature. I'm talking a devout Christian. That's the only list that you really need.
Well, that is a list.
It's a short list. These women have pages of lists of what they're looking for in a man. No wonder they're still single. Too picky. Absolutely. Four.
If you want them to like you, play hard to get.
All right, listen, we've got two more to go. Let's take a break and we'll finish. We've got five. We've been through three. We'll grab okay. The other two right after this.
Mark Gunger. Yeah, we've got an app for that. Download your free Mark Gunger app today.
This portion of the Mark Gunger Show is being brought to you by a new program that we have launched from our church. It's Celebration Church here in Green Bay, of which I'm the pastor. It's a transitional program. It's a one-year gap program from kids going from college, from high school into college. What we do primarily today is we take high school kids, as soon as they graduate, we throw them into college, and we think, oh, this is the best thing to do. When, in fact, a lot of them are going, they don't even know what they want to do. They have no direction what they're doing. They're floating around. And it's been a disaster because all the studies show about 80% of all our kids that go into college within 2 years have totally given up on their faith. Why is that? Because they're not really ready for college. One of the reasons we're ready for it is because a lot of the programs that are in our churches and what we do with our kids doesn't prepare them. It gives them diversions. It entertains them. It gives them a reason to want to come to a hot dog eating contest and this, or we're going to go camping. Not that those things are of themselves evil, but we're not really preparing them. A lot of so-called youth ministry is youth diversion. Keep them happy so they're not driving me crazy and they're not off having sex somewhere and then we're just going to... But that's not really building character, the kind of character that's going to carry them. Look at the studies. Look at the results, folks. How long does it take before we realize what we're doing is not working? Many programs like these have been popping up around the country. Actually, we're not the only one, but we have ours now. It's a one-year transition program called Transition One. We call it T1, where it's a one-year program. You go, and instead of just launching them off into college, we have this one-year program where they come, and for this nine-month period, we are teaching them about how to live successfully. We are doing it from a biblical standpoint. Now, this is not Bible college. We're not trying to create a Bible college. This is about how to make right decisions. There's things about the Bible, you know, using God's word and stuff like that, but how to do a successful life. Now, for the first 6 months, there's a lot of the classroom stuff teaching that we work with them, and here working in Green Bay and getting you involved hands-on and actually experiencing your faith. But the last 3 months of it, we send you. They pick a place. We got several places we go where they go out overseas in missions for 3 months. Now, a lot of people do like these, you know, 10-day, one-week mission trips. Oh, I went on a mission trip. Yeah, you kind of went on a weird vacation, really. That's not really. But even that can be life-changing, okay? But you really want to get changed? You put them someplace where they actually experience the other people who are really in a different world, and you can really minister to them. And anyway, check it out at transitionone.org. Send your kids. It'll be great.
Down in my heart,
we're back on the Mark Gunger Show talking about love, marriage, and relationships. Mark, Diane, and Phil. Okay, we're talking five horrible pieces of dating advice. One, you'll meet your spouse when you stop looking. Well, that's just ignorant. Two, follow your heart. Bad idea. Use your brain. Use wisdom. Number three, you're being too picky. Don't be so picky, for heaven's sakes. You know, I want the perfect woman, you know, who looks like a Swedish bikini model, but has the brains of Madame Curie, you know, for heaven's sakes.
And you look like Dorf on Golf.
And actually, I do look like Dorf on Golf. All right, number four.
If you want them to like you, play hard to get. Creating this unhealthy pursue-distance cycle may work for a while, but will ultimately leave the other person confused and feeling disrespected.
Yeah, now this one, it depends on what you mean by that. I think that, let me back up a little bit. One of the worst pieces of advice that people are running around churches today is telling young girls, guard your heart, guard your heart. Don't flirt with guys. Mm-hmm. Don't look at them, which is the stupidest advice on earth. They're going to just wind up being single forever, our churches are full of single. All you got to do is go to any church. Say, how many single women are here? Watch their hands go. Look like a Nazi rally. Single!
Oh my.
Single! See, arms going up everywhere, all right? Then ask, how many single men? One over there. Mm-hmm. And if you meet them, there's a reason they're single. Mm-hmm. Should probably stay so. We're all the single guys. You know what I'm saying? So these girls, they're not attracting because they're playing this stupid game. I'm not going to look at it. Virtually every relationship, listen to me, you girls. Listen, pay attention. And you parents, talk to your kids. Virtually every relationship is started by the woman. I forget, there's some study that looked at it was like 93% of every relationship. every marriage is started by the woman. The look, the flirt, the smile or something. That's how you hook their attention. Guys are very insecure. They're not going to go chasing somewhere where they feel they have no chance. So you kind of hook them, but then you play keep away and you get him pursuing you. It's a brilliant little dance. But if you go too hard, then he'll give up. So that here's the thing. That's why the Bible talks about older women teaching younger women how to live, how to do life. Mm-hmm. You should be talking to girls who, you know, here's the problem with single girls. They spend all their time with single girls.
Who don't know anything.
Who don't know anything. You're never going to learn how to do life if you spend and learn about marriage. And that's my problem with so many singles groups. They're led by single people. It's like having someone who's never had children do parenting classes. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're talking about. You ever talk to anybody who's never had a kid? Tell you how to raise a kid?
They're annoying as all get out.
They're delusional.
They have no idea.
Absolutely. Dumb as a brick. And the same as, I'm not going to get a lot of people mad here, but the same problem, unless your singles group is about just staying single and nobody wants to ever get married. But if most singles groups are about talking about how to find a spouse. Having a single person lead that group, in my opinion, is a disaster. Look at the results. So anyway, what was I talking about? playing hard to get. So you need to connect with other women who've done this, and they'll tell you how to do it. Ask advice. Well, what should I do? You know, talk to them. You know, it doesn't have to be you talking to some lady who's 78. I'm pretty sure when she dated, things were a little bit different. Yeah. But there's single girls. I mean, there's girls you're close to your age that are married in their 20s and 30s. Talk to them. Say, I'm dating this guy. What do you think I should do? If single girls would talk to married women about how to play the game, how to do the dance, they'd be much more successful finding a husband. So there. That's all I got to say about that.
And in today's culture, there's the opposite problem on the other side of the extreme, that too many of these girls are so aggressive and they just throw themselves, and that's not good either. It's either they're playing so hard to get or they're being too forward that they don't
really
know.
Abnormal.
Yes.
There's normal, and then there's abnormal. Functional, and there's dysfunctional. And we got a lot of dysfunction. We either play this game where these girls never talk to anybody, never look at them, and wonder how come they're not getting dates.
Yeah.
Knuckleheads. And then the other ones that hey, come get me! They're throwing themselves at the guys, and most guys aren't really...
Neither will work.
Yeah. Best advice, you single girls, talk to married women who have done this, and they'll tell you how to do it. Mm-hmm. In fact, they love telling girls how to do it. Nothing will light up a bunch of girls more than talking to another single girl who's dating a guy and them giving her advice. But if you're going to single girls to get your advice, you're going to get bad advice. All right.
Okay, the last one. Dating is a numbers game. It's probably true that most of us will probably need to date at least a few people before we find our spouse. However, the view that you need to date as many people as possible to find the right one can be taken to the extreme.
I would agree with that. This idea of, here's the problem, when you date, it depends on what you mean by dating. Going on one date and having dinner and ordering something expensive and sticking with the bill, I'm fine with that.
Going on a date.
Going a few dates. But what they do is they really get close to somebody and they dump and move on to someone, get close to them. Every time you do that, you give a little piece of your heart away to these people. And by the time you find someone, you got no pieces left to give. And they're very dysfunctional. Yeah. This idea that you've got to date tons of guys to find the right one is ridiculous.
Well, not emotionally invest yourself in tons of people. There's no way.
No, I know. So I don't have a problem about one, two times.
Going out for a hamburger.
And get long enough to realize you don't like this guy. But, it's not a numbers game. I don't know. The first date, official date. I think I married that one.
Well, that's because you were so young.
Still. I tell you what, I wasn't trying to play the numbers game.
No. It's like, let's find the one.
And I didn't have all these picky things and all, I don't know. It seemed to work out for me. Well, it's on the bubble.
How many did you date, Phil? Was it a numbers game?
I don't know. A few.
Just a few. A couple. A handful.
You'll find most people. It's just this idea of dating. It is really bad advice. All right. We got emails. We're going to come back with your emails right after this break.
Have a marriage dilemma? Email your questions to ask@markgunger.com. And Mark can answer them during one of our shows.
One day I'm going to take her home. Make a record with All Along.
The music of Jimmy Bratcher, the Electric Grave. Check out his music at jimmybratcher.com. What do you got there?
Guy writing, he says, so my wife thinks that a temporary separation is a good idea. We have 3 kids, 5, 3, and 4 months old. She does not do much of anything when it comes to cooking, cleaning, washing, taking kids to care, kids to the park, etc. She has made promises previously that she would drop off the kids when she had a car, so I got her one. She said she would do housework after she recovered from the baby. 4 months later, not much is being done. Whenever I am home, she asks me to do something. I will do my best to do it. She said she wanted me to do more, so I reduced my work 3 days a week. So he's only working 3 days a week. Now she said to my face a few times, I don't like you. I find you annoying. And I feel that that is unfair, he says.
You think?
Should I let her have her temporary separation, or should I tell her that I'm not going?
I don't know what you should tell her. I don't know the situation. This sounds really dysfunctional to me. Something's really weird. You need to go for counseling. If you haven't gone for counseling, you're making a big mistake. If you think you can write to me and get an answer really that'll give you clear direction, you're making a big mistake. And I know we haven't done shows for a while. I don't know how long that's been sitting in the hopper, but he really needs to go and get some help. I don't know. His wife doesn't want to do it. How can he work 3 days a week? Who's making money? How's that work?
I don't know.
You know, you disgust her? What are you doing? I don't know what he's doing. The way he describes it, it sounds like your wife's a complete nut job is the way you describe it. I don't know that she's a complete nut job. I don't know. Usually when people, all I know, people, is every time I've ever done counseling and spouse one describes spouse two, that when I get them both together, it's never right. It's never right.
Everybody has their perspective on the situation.
I think of the show House where he says everybody lies. Right. Yours is the compassionate version. I think people are, I don't know. Everybody likes to put stuff in their perspective so they make the other person look bad. I don't know. You have a wife who never wants to clean, never wants to do anything, won't drop off the kids. You have to do everything. You can only work 3 days a week now. And she's the one who's in control now wanting to separate from you. That doesn't make any sense. To me. Does that even make sense to you?
No. I think of the Everybody Loves Raymond episode where they actually show his version of what happened.
Yes.
They re-show it, her version of what happened, and then they show the third version of what
actually
really happened.
Yes.
And that's, usually both are pretty far away from the reality of it.
Yeah, what you described, my friend, sounds very dysfunctional. I really encourage you. You need to go to some counseling. Because I can't even get in the weeds of this. If everything he says is 100% correct, then she's really...
Well, it doesn't sound like it's a separation like you talk about to save the marriage. When people want a separation just because they want out or they maybe have somebody on the side or whatever, that's not the kind of separation that's going to save a marriage. That's not the kind of separation that you're talking about that is good.
Yeah, but the kind of separation I talk about is to confront the badly behaving person. What he's describing is the badly behaving person is asking for the separation.
Right. And then you don't give it to them.
Well, yeah, then you wouldn't give it to them.
No.
But it's just something's really dysfunctional here. Yeah. I mean, if you're 100% right in everything you're saying, you got some serious problems. And you just can't fix it with a guy like me. So anyway.
No.
I mean, if you guys were here, I could talk to both of you. I'd be happy to jump
Which
in.
Is the hard part with most of these emails.
No, I understand that.
One side
but
of it.
I just know when there are really multiple layers of crazy, I try to move on. All right.
She says, I have a question about online dating. I am a 26-year-old woman having no luck whatsoever in the dating department. No one seems to be interested in me, and the guys that I am interested in at church always put me in the friend zone. I really don't want to be 30 and single. If it was up to me, I'd have been married at 20. My question is online dating a good idea? What are your opinions of online dating?
I think it's fine, but just use your brain again. Don't get caught up emotionally. Use your brain. If you want to go, the way you catch fish is you go fishing. If you're fishing in the pond in the backyard and you can't find any fish, you go to a different pond. Or you go to the Great Lakes here in Wisconsin. Largest lakes in the world, lots of fish. If that doesn't work, try the ocean. Just keep looking. I don't have a problem. Now, people will say, well, there's all kinds of crazy people on online dating. I would probably concede that, but that's where you use your brain. Be logical. Be upfront. So I don't have a problem with it. Keep looking. That's how you do it. You make yourself available. And, hello, boys. I'm here. And, I think it's fine. It's like the lady who wrote us and said, where I live, there's no Christian single men. There's no single Christian man where I live. What am I supposed to do? Move! Move! I mean, she writes, she desperately wants to get married, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no men where she lives. That's what she's arguing. I think she was on an island, wasn't she?
Yeah, like, actually was on an island.
Island of, Bonga Bonga Land. It was some little tiny island. There's no Christian single men. I really want to get married. Move! If it's impossible to move, then, stay single. What are you going to do?
Evangedate.
What's that? oh, date guys and get them saved. You know, I'm not even opposed to that. She doesn't like it so much. But I think it's fine. I think you can date guys, but you bring them to church and see if they'll respond. I know a lady in church like that who's doing that now. Yeah. So I'm going to keep looking. I don't have a problem with online dating. Just use your brain in all dating. We'll be back after this.
Caution. The Mark Unger Show contains adult content intended for an adult audience.
Beautiful you. Fortunate.
The fabulous music of Michael O'Brien. This guy's brilliant. I think he's just brilliant. Check out his music at michaelo.org.
There's a new album coming out.
He does. Mm-hmm. Is it gospel, probably?
Probably.
Yeah, not just relation, but this romantic CD he does is the best I've ever heard in the Christian world. Usually, Christian romantic music is a little lame. But not this. This is killer. Great stuff. Okay, what do you got?
She says, I'm curious to know your opinion on in vitro fertilization. You know what that is?
Yes.
Okay. Just asking. I write to you as a woman who is happily married with one child. My husband and I were fortunate enough to conceive easily, but we have close friends who are struggling with fertility issues. And by the way, they're 29. The ones that are struggling, I asked because I knew you would want to know. They underwent IVF and just found out that she is pregnant, but she is also hospitalized because of the side effects from the drugs and the procedures. Mm-hmm. I know my perspective is tainted because I don't know the heartache of longing for a child, but I struggle with my opinion of IVF and how to be a good and supportive friend. It seems so unnatural. I wonder if God gave us science as a gift or if science is playing God. She wants to know your opinion.
I'd relax if I were you. I don't have a problem with science and medicine and stuff. You say, it's playing God. Well, praise God. Look, I don't know about you, but if it weren't for medicine, I'd be dead.
I probably would be too.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be here.
I know that I would be.
I wouldn't be here. Man, I had an appendicitis whatever thing when I was a little boy. I saw it was a big, back then they used like a big machete or something to open you. I look like I was in a massive gang fighter. You should see the side. You've seen this?
I've seen your scar.
It's a massive scar here. It looks like, you know, it's like an inner city, I got you, you know, fight or something like that.
The tough mean streets of Neillsville, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah, the Neillsville, Wisconsin street fighter that I was. So, you know, if it weren't for medicine, I probably would have died.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a problem. You say, well, you know, it is... I don't know, you know. I mean, at some point, you got to deal with your own conscience. The Bible talks about issues of conscience. And when it talks about issues of conscience, what the Bible basically teaches is mind your own business. Mm-hmm. That's what it teaches. Because there's things the Bible doesn't say. There's a lot of stuff the Bible doesn't say. Then it's a matter of conscience. And that's when you mind your own business. So my advice to you, my dear, is mind your own business, okay? Be a supportive friend. Why do you care? You don't want to do it, then don't do it. She's done it. It's all kinds of people do. So, you know, do plastic surgery and stuff and boob jobs and whatever like that. People have problems. I don't have a problem with it. You know, it's, you know, not if you're doing it. Everybody, well, if they're doing it for the wrong reason. If you do anything for the wrong reasons, it's bad. But just because somebody does it. I mean, I had LASIK surgery on my eyes. I, all my life, have not been able to see that far in front of my face. I'm serious. It was that far before I could see anything in focus. All right? I had big old pop bottle. If you look in the very first old DVD of Laughing Way to a Better Marriage, you'll see me walking around. I look like, you know... Like a walking fly.
Magoo.
Mr. Magoo.
All right. And you look at it and say, that's kind of creepy. Yeah. I look like everybody, oh, that guy with the fly eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So I let someone come in with lasers and my eyeballs, which was really creepy, I got to tell you. You think, oh, Lord, please let that machine work. Because if something goes wrong.
You're blind.
You're blind. You don't see anything. All right. I did it. Did I play God? I don't think so. I was just playing fix my eyes so that I can see now. And actually, you see these glasses?
You don't even have to wear lens.
There's no lenses in them. Now, I normally, it's just because they reflect back and stuff like that, and I normally wear glasses. But the glasses I wear are very, very low prescription. I don't really even need to wear them. I like wearing glasses, you know. And it's a little clearer. And I like things really, really clear. So, you know, just mind your own business. Now, I could speak into people who are in situations like that. She's 29. Mm-hmm. All right, still fairly young. But I got to tell you, you know, the older you get, the harder it takes to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
This whole thing of waiting, especially in your 30s, to try and have your first. You know how many people are frustrated trying to get pregnant in their 30s?
And how many people are doing it?
Oh, my gosh. So, stop and think of the stupidity. you know, not to be mean to your friend or those of you who are struggling, you know, we feel for you. But I mean, and you're just following your culture, which is stupid. The culture is stupid and you bought into stupid. We'll put it that way. But you wait away because you got to have money, right? Can't get married till you have money. You got to have lots of money. Let's have lots of money. So now we're 29, 28, 30, 42, whatever, because we got to have all this money. And now we're getting money. You know, we got all this pile of money, okay? Where's the, I need a pile of money. We don't have any money around here. I use this for my money pile, all right? Here is my money pile. We finally now have done what the world says we should do and stupid Christians say we should do is make sure you have lots of money before you get married. All right? We did that. Now we're 32. Now we want to get pregnant. We can't. Why? Because your body doesn't care that you wanted all that money ahead of time. Most people throughout the history of mankind got pregnant somewhere around 16. Oh, we push that back. 18, 20, 21, da-da-da-da-da, okay. But they keep pushing it further and further, and now we have all this problem with the pregnancies. So now what they do, they take this big pile of money and they throw it away trying to get pregnant. What was the win here? Explain to me the win. What have you accomplished? Now you don't have the money because y'all spent it. And here's the crazy thing. You could spend it and still not be pregnant.
Right.
Which means if you'd have gotten married younger, had babies younger, you could have still had the money and you get to keep the money. Anyway, so that's my beef. I think people should get married younger and stuff like that. But despite, you know, people come to their own issues about stuff that's not in the Bible. Someone's doing in vitro fertilization or fixing their eyeballs or, you know, whatever. Leave them alone. Mind your own.
Well, in the end, ultimately, isn't it God who creates that life? If he doesn't want them to be pregnant and doesn't want to create a new life out of IVF, then that's not going to happen anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's like, how do you think that that's playing God? I mean, like, God is out of it because you're doing something.
Oh. In other words, life, even if you do that, God is still involved.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. A good argument. Look, you know, you having sex could be considered playing God. Really? You want to get pregnant?
Well, that was his
plan. Well, we want God to do it, and we don't, you know, so we're not going to have sex. So we're going to trust God.
Well, there are people, like, with cancer treatments and stuff, you know, I went through it. Uh-huh. They would say, you just pray and God will heal you. I know people who have done that, and they have died because they chose to not let, you know, medicine intervene. Yeah. I'm sorry, I chose to let doctors intervene, yeah. And I'm sitting here today.
I get it. But if you decided not to, I would not judge you, and vice versa. Your own decisions. Mm-hmm. You know, this whole life and death thing, you're all going to die anyway. That's the bad news. So, all I'm saying, biblically speaking, you got a matter of questionable of conscience and choice. The Bible says, mind your own business. That's my answer to you, my dear.
Mind
and thanks for
business.
Watching. Seriously, it's mind your own business. All right.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Let's see. This is a woman writing. Right now, I'm not living with my husband because he's been flirting with other women. I'm pretty sure he has cheated on me from the conversations via chat that I have read, although he denies it. Mm-hmm. And he's just been a jerk almost for the entire 6 years we've been married. He's rude, he doesn't lead a Christian life, and we are just miserable. Mm-hmm. So now everyone is saying that we should keep working on a relationship, but I've had enough. We don't have any children, so I left by myself to go to my parents' house, but I feel so free and full of plans that were not even possible when I was with him. We got married when I was 21, he was 23, after 6 months of online dating. So I now see that it was a rush. My question is that, do I have to stay with him just because we're married? I don't love him. We don't have much in common.
Wait. Can you hear that question? Read that again.
My question is, if I have to stay with him just because we're married.
Yes. that's what marriage means. Oh, what the matter with you? Yes. That's when you stood at the altar and you said, before God, we will stay together for life. Does that mean I have to be staying with him just because we're married? Yes, that's what marriage means. Now, the only biblical exception is if, in fact, he has been having sex with other women, then you can break it off. But you don't know that for sure. And I would remain highly skeptical. She's just unhappy. She's miserable. And women tend, some women, don't write me about this, some women lie to get what they want. Do you know how many women, when they're fighting for their children in a divorce, suddenly claim that he is a sexual pervert? Mm-hmm. That he was
abusive to her
or mm-hmm. to the children. I mean, I know guys who had this slammed at them. Now, they were idiots because they let their marriage fall apart in so many different ways. But I know these men were not child molesters. And they go to the child molester thing, and they make this big argument. Of course, because if they can prove he's a child molester, they get to keep the kids. Some of them, they'll just lie to get what they want. And she wants out of the marriage, and she probably knows the only way out of the marriage is, biblically speaking, he's being unfaithful to me. So, therefore, I'm pretty sure he's been unfaithful. Do I get to leave? If he's been, and you can prove, and it's documented that he's been unfaithful, yeah, you can. That's not your problem. Your problem is you just want to leave the marriage. And when all your friends are saying you can still work on this, and he's still willing to work on it, but you don't want to work on it anymore, the problem is you, dear. Yeah. You have a
problem. She says he wants me back, but I don't want to go back.
Yeah. It's her. Yeah. She's unhappy. She doesn't like him for whatever reason. Might have good reasons. I don't know. Well, he was flirting. Says her. I don't know what he's been doing. Again, people exaggerate to get what they want. They do. They do it all the time. This is a classic example. I would have this couple come in. She'd say, he does this, 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 and I'll bring them both in and find out he never does it at all. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it happens to me all the time.
Well, it was done.
And it's like, I'm like dumbfounded. I look at one like, your husband curses at you in the church. Yes, he curses. You're telling me he curses at you. Yes, he curses. So I call him up and bring him in and set him down. Why are we here? Your wife says that you curse at her. And he goes, I never curse at you. And then she gets real quiet. And I'm thinking, you lying little snot. I mean, when he wasn't in the room, he cursed because she knows that's what I want to hear and maybe let her out of the deal. I don't know. Who knows what's going on? I think, dear, it sounds like when everybody in your life is saying you need to work on this and even he's willing to work on it, the only one that doesn't want to work on it is you. You are the problem. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more right after this.
Attend Mark's Laugh Your Way to a Better Marriage event. Visit laughyourway.com for upcoming dates and locations.
We are back on the Mark Gunger Show, talking about love, marriage, relationships, dating, blah de blah blah blah. I'm Mark Gunger, along with Diane Brierley and the amazing Philip James Gunger, answering your emails. Although Philip pretty much has been over there typing all afternoon, so
sorry, I'm doing.
It's all right. I don't care. Go ahead. He's the wild card perspective. Yes. Yeah. All right.
Okay. 15-year-old girl writing. She says, "When I was 12, I was first introduced to self pleasure, aka." Masturbating,
yes.
I am a Christian.
12.
12. Introduced to it. I didn't ask how.
And we're still playing with Barbie dolls at 12? I mean, seriously, yeah. I'm still playing Army. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to play Army, guys. I'll be this Army guy, you be that Army. We're sitting around yanking on ourselves. Good Lord.
But we're old. We're old.
I guess the generations. Yes. Now the 12, they're showing them how to masturbate. Oh, dear God. Probably learned at school. All right, go ahead.
I am a Christian and want to do my best as a teenager in a sex-filled world to be as godly and holy as possible.
Yes.
I am trying to stop because I don't think it's right. I have looked in the Bible for anything related, and maybe I didn't look in the right place, but I could not find much. I have talked to a few trusted adults who are also Christians, and they don't seem to think that it's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused because I feel like it should be wrong. So my question is, if it is a sin and I continue doing it, will it affect my marriage one day or any relationship I have with a guy in general? I do not want to mess up my life or possibly my marriage or relationships. I am a virgin, by the way. I plan to stay that way till I'm married.
All right. Number one, your friends are just wrong. There are so many Christians who, when it comes to the masturbating, they say, well, there's nothing wrong because the Bible doesn't say don't masturbate. But the Bible doesn't say don't a whole lot of things. Here's what the Bible, see what the we don't live under the law. The New Testament, there's no law of Christianity. Like in the Old Testament, there was laws about everything. What you could do, what you couldn't do, where you could work, what you could eat, what you couldn't eat, how to cook a goat, how not to cook a goat, when to make love to your wife, when you couldn't make love to your wife. I mean, they had rules about everything. Then we come to the New Testament. It's virtually rule-free, except for basic Christian morality, you know, adultery and this and that kind of stuff. Lying, cheating. So people assume, well, the Bible doesn't say it, so therefore I can do it. No. The way we know what to do in the New Testament is it consistent with God's principles? We don't need a law now, which, by the way, is what opens up Christianity to many debatable subjects. And that's why Paul said, when it comes to debatable stuff, don't argue about stuff and mind your own business. About stuff that doesn't matter. You don't know what God wants about in vitro fertilization. Neither do I do. Leave people alone. Make them their own decisions. Nothing contrary there. Let me show you what the Bible says. Jesus said, if a man looks lustfully, or a person looks lustfully at another person, that's a sin. So, no thinky. Okay? Now, does it say masturbating per se. Not really, but one could argue. What does he say? Don't look lustfully. In the very next words, if your eye offends you, pop it out, which is consistent with looking at lustfully, especially if you have the one wandering eye. You know. And number two, if your hand offends you, cut it off. Well, what do you think he's talking about? Now, there is, I read somewhere, I don't know, I'm not Jewish, but I read somewhere that one of the things in the Torah is saying something about if your hand goes below your belt, you should cut it off, which means, it was a way of referring about masturbating. Well, that's in fact a Jewish proverb that's not written in the Bible, but it kind of was known. That would have been consistent with Jesus even making a comment like that. And everybody knew it doesn't mean really cut off your hand, it just means leave yourself alone. Okay? But one thing we can say, whether or not we argue, whether or not he meant that about that, we don't know. What he does says, don't, no thinky. All right? Now, Paul said, you should not be touching someone of the opposite sex that you're not married to. So no touchy. So the principles of Christianity are no thinky, no touchy. No thinky, no touchy. Then, in the context of that, we make decisions. Bible doesn't say anything about masturbating. I don't know. Is it thinky and touchy? Yes, then don't do it. Bible doesn't say you can't give your boyfriend oral sex. You're right. It doesn't say that. But does it involve thinky and touchy? Yeah, then don't do it. Bible doesn't say we can't get naked and run around laying on the bed and just praising Jesus while watching TBN. No, it doesn't say that. But if there's thinky and touchy involved, you don't do it. So these people you're talking to, they're well-meaning people. They're just wrong. It's just part of the ignorance that is in the Christian community today because they don't understand the basic biblical concepts of these are the principles we live by. We make our decisions based on these principles. Is it consistent with God's principles? And masturbating, looking at porn, oral sex, all this other stuff when you're not married is wrong because it involves thinky and touchy. It's just that simple. So you're just getting bad advice. So is it wrong? Yes. Number one, it's wrong because of the thinky-touchy rule. Number two, will it affect your life someday? It will. So you need to stop. An actual sexual experience is not the same as with your hand. And I know of women who did this all their life, just like you. They eventually got married, and they've never been able to achieve an orgasm with a man's penis. They can't because they've so conditioned their body to respond to their hand. So what they literally do is after he's done having sex with her, then she has to do it herself to catch up to him. It's the only way they can function. And if that's you today, God bless you. Do whatever you got to do. But sweetheart, you don't want to live like that, do you? Don't do it. And don't think that God's going to take away your desire to do it. Okay? Everybody thinks, well, I can't stop. Mm-hmm. Lord, take this away from me. God, take this away. I've been praying about stopping masturbating. God, porn. God, take this porn away from me. But God doesn't answer my prayer. No, that's not a prayer. God's not going to take your feelings away. The only way God can take your feelings away is he kills you. Then your feelings will be gone. It doesn't matter what you feel. You don't have to do what you feel. That's what you don't understand. Our feelings and our actions need to be separate. It's just that simple. People feel all kinds of bad things. You just don't do it. You don't have to do it. Well, what about grace? The Bible says the grace of God teaches us to say no to ungodliness and to live self-controlled lives. The grace of God will enable you to, nobody has to masturbate, dear. Masturbate, you don't have to do it. Just stop, for heaven's sakes. All right, enough of that. We'll be back with another email right after this.
Want more of Mark? Visit markgunger.com. There you will find everything that Mark has to offer.
Never ever fuss and fight. We learned a long time ago how to get it right. Hugs and kisses, sweet perfume. My baby loves me, so I sing this tune.
I love my baby.
I love my baby.
Yeah, I love my baby.
Sweet, sweet.
Yeah, and I love my baby. And my baby loves me.
Of Jimmy Bratcher, The Mark Unger Show, talking about love, marriage, and relationships. What do you got?
Okay, this is kind of a short one because we're short on time. She says, good afternoon. I was wondering your opinion on 1 Corinthians 11. It's about the head covering business. The verse is about the head covering. My husband's family practices this, and I have pressure from them on this practice. Should our hair be covered, or should I wear a veil? Does this still have context in today's world? Thank you so much for your time. God bless your ministry.
If it's part of your church culture and your church family culture and they want you to do it, then do it. You know, whether or not you agree, if this is part, you know, I'm part of a church community that we do this and I hate it. Well, if that's part of your church community, whatever, then do it. What, you know, I don't know. do I understand? I don't understand that part. You know, all the guys that I know say it has to do with culture and don't mess with your culture. I promise you, you go to the Middle East today and you try and preach the gospel in the Middle East and you're saying that women don't have to submit to their husbands and women don't have to do this, you're not going to get anywhere. To this day, you'd have to print out this very submissive rule. It's a tough sell in Western culture. But I think that's all Paul was doing. He was talking about, let's do whatever we got to do to make the gospel appealing to people. That's still consistent with our values. Mm-hmm. So I think in their culture, the proper thing was for a woman always to wear something on her head and for a woman always to do this and da-da-da-da. And that's why everybody says he was so anti-woman. So anti-woman, look at the world that he came from. Look at that world to this day. Go to the Middle East. In a lot of countries, women can't even drive. They can't even go to school. I mean, you know.
By the way,
yes.
Did you see?
You give me a heart attack.
I'm sorry.
Good
it just
Lord.
Popped into my head real quickly.
There's a spider on me. Ah! I don't know. What are you gasping about?
No. All did right. you see the story? It was on Drudge. The story about the woman in Pakistan, her husband and her father-in-law. First of all, they beat her. And then they put gas on her and they lit her on fire, burned like 80% of her body, and she died from the burns. And you know why?
They called it an honor. I saw the headline for an honor. I didn't
killing.
Read it, though.
Because she left the house to go visit her sister and didn't ask him permission to be gone.
Okay, now that's dysfunctional craziness.
3,000 of those kinds of so-called honor killings since 2008. So in the last, 7 years or whatever?
3,000.
3,000.
Because now that's a very dysfunctional culture. Now, you go to that dysfunction, you want to straighten it out with the love of Christ. You don't kill people for stuff like that. But you don't just come around and say, well, women can just cut their hair and walk around and do whatever. Because that culture just could not handle it. They have a hard time handling much of what we do anyway. So I'm saying this is the world that Paul wrote. I think that's what he was talking about when you read that in the Bible. We don't pay attention today because it's not, if anything, you have the exact opposite problem in Western culture. You got a woman walking around looking like that all the time. People are going to think they're nuts. And then it's hard to sell the gospel over here. Mm-hmm. I just think that's what it was about. Having said that, if you're in a culture and a family and they think the proper thing is to wear a veil when you go to church, wear a veil when you go to church. What do you care? You got to live with these people. I don't know. You know what, everybody? Everybody wants everybody to just let them be themselves and nobody bother me and I can do anything I want whenever I want. Well, that's fine if you can live all by yourself. Here's the thing. We put you on an island somewhere in the Pacific. You can do whatever you want. If you're the only person on the island, you go around buck naked, wear veils, no veils, shave your head, grow a beard. It doesn't matter. You can do anything you want. But when you live with people, you usually find there's accommodations you got to make people happy and get along with them. Again, I don't know her situation, but she says her family and everybody's concerned about wearing veil. Then where are they? Shoot, if I had to live with these people, I'd wear one. All right, see ya!
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!